This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit mensteeclinic.com.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 Through the Fan. You got me, Kevin Hagelin, Corey Majors, the famous Mike Bassick.
Holy cow.
And of course, mystery audio man himself, Alec Medford. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Now, I've got this question, but we need to dive into some other stuff as well. Did Jerry Jones pretty much set Mike McCarthy up to fail this season? While you ponder, Jane Slater came out with a report, and obviously people picked it up quickly. Sources tell her that the initial diagnosis for Dak was a partial avulsion of his hamstring tendon, which is partially torn off the bone. Probably won't surprise you to know that usually takes more than 4 weeks. And if you need surgery, out for the season.
Hold on, what did you just say? If you need surgery, the muscle tears off the bone and it just magically attaches itself back to the bone?
Isn't that awesome?
This is a fair question that you ask because Dak is doing the right thing and he's getting more opinions. I don't know enough about medical science to know if you're going to roll up on the doctor's like, it'd be fine. He'll just stick right back on there and you'll be good to go.
Your muscles are basically made of gum.
Yeah, I don't know that to be the case, but if Mike's really thinking that over, ask your wife that tonight. But it feels like an IR stint is a cinch at this point. And then now you have the looming specter of potential season-ending surgery, which, like you said, since part of the hamstring got torn off the bone, that makes sense.
Yeah. So what's your question on this then?
My question is, I guess, like, does that change?
That's scary.
Yeah. Or does it change anything from like 2 days ago where like, oh yeah, he's hurt, he might go in the IR?
I mean, Mike, what do we discuss when it comes to injuries and aging? You just keep getting more of them. It's like, that's going to continue. And now you have a long contract with the guy. So for this season specifically, I would just say, I don't expect him back. Can you guys, you guys have felt that Cooper Rush can tread water until, I don't know if that's the case.
I want to make this very clear. I think Cooper Rush can accomplish my goals for the rest of the season.
Okay. I know what your goals are, so I appreciate that.
Or Trey Lance, I'm assuming.
Yeah, yes, either one. Or Trey Lance, he can also accomplish my goals.
They were all
for
accomplishing those goals before
yes,
these, this game.
Yes, they were.
Anyway. So that's, but that, then the for the longevity of it, like short term, bad. Longevity of it, bad too.
I'm with you, and here's the deal. If let's just say you get past Thanksgiving, and I know that we think the Giants is a winnable game, like whoever the quarterback
sure.
is. Let's just give them that win, but let's just knock them with three more losses before that game. So if you're 4-8.
What's the point?
Yeah, right? At that point, you know you're not making the playoffs. You're not going to win out, and let's just assume you do. At 9-8, you're probably not making the playoffs. Maybe you get the last wild card spot, but probably not. So then you got to look at Dak, and that ankle only has so much time left.
Yep.
And maybe, I don't know this, maybe the ankle led to this. There's no way to prove that. And there's no way I would even try to prove that. I'm just throwing out theories. A lot of times people will say, well, when you have something that's weak, something else has to compensate for that weakness.
Mm-hmm. I get that.
Exactly.
That's why you hear people who are minorly injured, injure themselves in another way all the time. Cause they're trying to protect said first injury.
Matt Harrison was the person we discussed that about a long time ago. It started with a toe, went up his leg, then it's his back, and it just kind of was all those things. He was overcompensating.
Kevin Durant, when he had the ankle thing and he decided to play and then snapped his Achilles.
Yeah.
Or the calf thing that ended up. And I'm not. And that's an example. I'm not saying this happened with Dak, but you do have to worry about that. If that ankle that he has to wear a boot on at times in the off season because of soreness and fatigue and pain, then maybe knees, hamstrings, hips have to take on more of the stuff that it is to be an NFL player slash NFL quarterback. So for me, if you are 4-8, let's say, yeah, with five games to go, and you know that this player is limited in his ability a little bit by 1%, by 10%, I don't know the percentage, because of the ankle surgeries that he's had, then maybe it's best to, like, why are we wasting four more games on a guy that only has so many games left in his career?
We will have Jerry Jones on tomorrow at 10:30.
Yes.
And I know we're going to ask, you know, how do you feel about Dak? How's Dak doing? We're going to ask those questions. And I almost guarantee Jerry Jones will say, if there's anybody that will put in the work, that anybody that can heal faster,
yeah,
from this injury than anybody else,
yeah,
it's Dak Prescott. I can almost guarantee that's going to happen tomorrow.
No, I think you're right.
And that's his job.
No, absolutely. But wouldn't you argue, I just want to make this clear, I agree with all of the points that you made on the other side about what you should do, what's smart for career longevity and everything like that. I will tell you this, like, for as much as he's had his struggles, Dak does seem like a tough MF-er that 100%. Wants to compete at all costs. So
which could be a detriment.
Yes. So my concern is, even if they are 4-8, which I could totally see that he's like, if we break off five in a row, we could still make the playoffs, put me in the damn game.
He already trained too hard. He did overtrained whenever he had the ankle injury, which caused him to have to go get another surgery on it back then.
Yeah.
You know, like that was, he worked too hard. And that's, like I said, detriment. It's not a bad thing, but it can cause bad outcomes. So yeah, I agree with you. Dak's going to be like, whatever I got to do to get out there. Because A, he's a leader. He is a leader. He wants to be out there for his guys.
I agree with that 1,000,000%.
He doesn't want to let them down. He hates that part of it. I totally understand it. This is now a question of, do you take into the short term or long term whenever you're looking at the approach for this season? How much does it matter when it looks like it's almost a lost cause already?
I'm with you. I just wonder if they'll come that conversation and they're like, hey, we're thinking about your career, long term, short term. And he says, I don't care. I want to play. Like, I can't rule out that conversation takes place.
I understand that.
I'm not saying it's a good idea.
But at this point, and I know they'll however do it, you owe him $90 million next year.
Yes, you do.
And I know that'll be a different number by the time we get to it.
I understand your point.
But you have to look at it as the Cowboys organization and go, Dak, I get what you want. You do run into issues with players union and stuff like that. I'm completely healthy and I want to play and they're not allowing me to. But I think Dak would understand. I hear what you're saying. I think Dak would want to play. I do think Dak is a highly competitive guy who wants to be out there if he's healthy enough to be out there. But I would look at a season, if you're 4-8, and let's be honest, he's probably not going to be ready to play at 4-8.
Fair enough, based on everything that we said. So this is all the contingency in case he doesn't need season-ending surgery. If he does, there you go. We'll move on our business accordingly.
I think also,
I think he'd still try to come back this season.
Can I ask you this? Based off of, if you're reading his, if you're lip reading correctly.
Yes.
The we suck.
It looked like he said we effing suck.
If that's true, there might not be as much fight in him for 2024. Does that make sense? If he's
that's interesting,
we aren't good. Our offensive line is below average. We have no running game. I have one receiver on this team that's of NFL starting caliber. We'll see if Mingo can do that.
Sure.
But he might go, look, I know how bad we are this year. I get it. I even, unfortunately, a camera caught me saying how bad we are this year.
Yeah.
So there might not be, I'm not saying it doesn't make him highly competitive, but he might understand the situation this is in, which then goes to the first question you asked.
I think that is a great question. Absolutely. Now, to the other part of it, and I know Bobby was answering when we were in the crosstalk, I saw a column about this that kind of had me thinking about it and doing a little bit of my own research. I believe, I'm trying to double check, it was Tim Kalishaw. Yeah, Tim Kalishaw, who kind of brought up this idea. So I looked into it a little bit more. Do you think that Jerry Jones set Mike McCarthy up to fail this season?
I thought that before the season.
Okay, can you tell me why that is?
They didn't do anything to add to the team.
All right. So here's what I put, because it sounds like you and I are in lockstep. Now, Kalishaw spent a lot of the time in the column, which this is not necessarily the angle I would go to, but I really liked his idea about how Dak Prescott, got a huge contract extension. CeeDee Lamb got a huge contract extension. He has no contract extension. So that kind of undercuts his authority. I'm not disputing that that's the case. But what caught me was more in line with what you said, Corey, is I was thinking about, you didn't do anything in free agency. You let your left tackle walk. Tony Pollard, who, by the way, leads the NFL in broken tackles, you let him walk and brought in Ezekiel Elliott instead. You didn't draft a running back. Instead, went with a project quarterback, even though you gave Dak his money. I think it was those.
In a raw tackle, yes, to replace the tackle you let go.
And I think it was these moves that I felt like set up to fail was probably accurate, actually.
And if you were going to do that and you were going to say, hey, all these young players, Mike, it's your responsibility to grow them.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
For you.
Yeah.
Then the contract that's given to the coach is the proof that it's going to be, you're growing them and grooming them for you. Otherwise, the coach is making decisions based on, I got to figure out how to win this year because this might be my last year, rather than I have to win, or I have to grow talent while also, and develop talent while also looking to the future 3 years down the road while in the big picture of this.
I like what you guys are saying. I won't go as far to say set him up for failure.
Okay.
I get where you're coming
and
from.
And I do have a counterpoint to maybe he didn't set him up for failure, but keep going.
Yeah, I think that setting him up to possibly make a playoff run and win the Super Bowl, you probably didn't come close to giving him that opportunity. Did you give him enough, Mike McCarthy, without all of the major injuries they've suffered, to make the playoffs? Yes,
yeah. I think
this, you thought they were going to make the playoffs. Corey thought they were going to make the playoffs. I thought that they were going to go 10-7 and make the playoffs and get hammered in the first round.
Yep.
So we all thought that this team before the season started had enough talent to make the playoffs. That's what we all said before the season started. So now, did anybody think they were going to make a run to the NFC Championship game or the Super Bowl? No, I don't believe that you guys thought that. No. Maybe I'm wrong about that.
I did
that.
Not.
But you guys thought they were making the playoffs.
Yes.
So that's enough to be like, no, you're not setting them up for failure.
And that's where the other part of this comes in. Because I keep thinking about a quote that, sorry, I'm going to have to paraphrase. I don't have the exact quote. I think it was last week or so. McCarthy was insistent that ever since he started installing this particular offense, it's been working for 30 years. And I'm like, yeah. And it shows. I think Mike McCarthy, and this is where I think about your idea of like maybe he wasn't set up for failure. I think about McCarthy and saying, hey, this has worked for a really, really long time. I think the lack of variety, lack of pre-snap motion has caused this offense to be stale and at least partially, if not largely, responsible for the lack of separation from the wide receivers and the tight ends. And so that part of it is like, I don't know, maybe his own stubbornness about, oh, this has worked in the past. I don't have to hybrid it up and it'll work again.
Yeah. But what that was the promise that he made to Jerry was that he'd changed whenever he signed the deal. And then he told you, he was like, no, I was just joking. I didn't really.
That was an interesting dynamic that happened straight away. And he's like, I mean, I saw some analytics.
This would be something that I have no interest in doing. But if you do, and you have like the all 22 film, could you go back and watch the last 2 years? Literally, almost every play he ran with Aaron Rodgers, his last 2 years in Green Bay, and then watch the last 2 years here in Dallas and see if they're running the exact same plays. Then it would match up. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's
so
a
you'd
good
go
question.
Like, well, they're literally, oh wait, that was a new play. Oh wait, he ran five different plays this game that I didn't see in the, I don't know, 50 times 16 is
plus
800.
So in the last 1600 plays he ran in Green Bay, so you go over the last 2 years of every play he ran, and then you go over the last 2 years of every play he ran in Dallas. If you get 90% of the plays are the same.
Yeah.
He, like, I know the wordage and everything, then you're right. He didn't change at all.
And then
you'd have to go back and watch that.
That is a fair point.
And I'm not doing that.
And then I, of course, you see the people who come in and they're like, yeah, well, when you have potentially generational quarterbacks in Favre and Rodgers, that probably makes your life easier.
It does make it a lot easier.
Yeah, and then how many times does Rodgers and Dak,
bail out his coach.
That he actually doesn't even run the play that was called in because he sees something as a veteran Hall of Fame quarterback to roll out this play, and then he hits a tight end on the sideline for 28 yards, and then they kick a 50-something yard field goal, and you're out of the playoffs.
Why are you bringing up old stuff, Mike?
I was there.
I was watching it. It hurt.
It was a great play.
You know what? I got terrible news for you, Corey. Tomorrow at 10:30, a lot of old stuff's going to get brought up.
Really?
Yeah, because that's what happens.
All right.
Oh, please. This is the fakest really I've ever heard.
What's your point?
Okay, well, there you go. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, let's talk some Mavs Bulls, plus Lively, plus are these early NBA trends sustainable? Next on The Fan.
Marshall outside to Luka. This all started when they did get a shot, but it was blocked by Powell, and
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. I am not here to argue that the Chicago Bulls are a good team whatsoever. However, when going into the game, we already knew PJ Washington was going to be out. When Derek Lively, as the day went along, went from questionable to doubtful to then out, I had a lot of concerns of what the hell our defense was going to look like in this game. I was pleasantly surprised. No needs for such concerns. And I'm not just saying shooting percentage-wise, because I realize, like, the Bulls didn't have a really good shooting percentage, especially from three. I'm saying possession by possession, you saw some really good defense compared to what I thought was going to happen yesterday.
I'm with you. I mean, Corey's over there pumping his fist. I'm sorry,
Cowboys sign Andrew Booth back to the practice squad. So
hell yeah!
Making additions of things that we just subtracted.
Politics.
But we got it, baby. No, that's not. Different Booth. Different Booth. Hey, look, man. Kai and Luka combined for 7 steals. Like, is that...
Wow.
That's something that...
I did not know that,
actually.
It felt
like Kai almost on like 3 straight possessions had a steal. I think, Kevin, the defensive effort that they gave last night definitely did come from the energy that Chicago was kind of filling the room with. Because they were moving around, trying to get shots off early, and the Mavericks had to wake up early in that game. You know, because we've seen the Mavericks kind of slowly get into it. They had to wake up quick.
I heard Quentin Grimes say this in the postgame. He said we obviously had a bad game against the Pacers defensively, so that woke us up. And then he said, we let the Pacers get going in the first quarter, and we couldn't stop the momentum. And so he talked. Now, I know he's not a starting player, but I do think he was giving you what kind of Jason Kidd and the coaching staff was giving them their day off to get prepared for the Bulls is, hey, you guys played pathetic defense for 4 quarters. One of the reasons it was pathetic for 4 quarters was you let Indiana have all the confidence in the world in the first quarter. You guys have done that before, recently, against the Houston Rockets, where you're like, oh, the first quarter doesn't mean anything. The issue is if you don't play defense in the first quarter, it's tough to turn the switch on as the game progresses. Second of all, you give a team a lot of confidence when you give them wide open look after wide open look for 12 straight minutes. They go off for 35-plus points, and now you're like, hey, we need to play defense this game. Well, good luck, because they're all confident right now for the second, third, and fourth quarter because you guys decided not to engage at all in the first quarter. So I think that Quentin Grimes was giving the message of, will it stick for the next 70 games? I don't think so. But
it's just fair.
The message is if you guys don't care about defense in the first quarter, good luck turning off the confidence of the other team the second, third, and fourth quarter, and you guys engaging in defense the rest of the game.
Now, I wanted to throw to something else, Corey, that you brought up in our show text.
Did I include Alec in that one? Because sometimes the Bobby one gets mixed in.
I think that might be Bobby.
Were you in on that? I think he was in on that.
Okay.
I was. Yeah, there
but
we go.
You were talking about Najee Marshall and how you thought he was playing. I was hoping you could expand on that without all the profanity that you always use in our group.
Yeah, sorry about that. It's just, you know, words.
It's true.
I thought he fit in really well last night with the starting five. And it started like kind of churning in my mind is like, could PJ take a sixth man role and lead that second unit, you know, kind of be
some
that
guy. Some
people
want Clay to take a sixth
man. I'm not asking for this to happen, but with Najee Marshall, he looks better on the floor with better players around him. I mean, that's a clear thing. Whenever you understand how that works, but he looked comfortable bringing the ball up the court as a third person to distribute, and he was not distribute, set up. More of a setup offense, you know, because Kai and Luka are more going to be the guys that distribute, but he looked very comfortable doing it. He didn't look comfortable trying to go up for the alley-oop that Luka set him up for, but that's okay. A couple people didn't look good last night doing that. Omax, it's all right. It's okay. Not everybody's prepared for it. Not everybody also is Daniel Gafford, so it's perfectly all right. But his defense fit in with what they asked of him. You just talked about yesterday, Jason Kidd saying PJ's doing everything. Well, Najee was like, I can do those things too. And he just looked comfortable in the role that he was asked to play last night. I think whenever he comes in with that second group, he's asked to be a little more with a little lesser on the court. So that's why I'm starting to like look at it, go, will it balance out a little bit if you move PJ around a little? I don't know, but that's what Jason Kidd has this opportunity early in the season to mix and match and play around with some things.
Kevin, you had a sentence that I don't disagree with during Corey, which I hear what Corey's saying is maybe the perfect scenario, but you probably can't do it yet.
Klay Thompson as your sixth man?
Is that Najee goes into the starting rotation and that Klay, 5 minutes into the game, comes in with, if you're healthy, Derek Lively. So your first rotation is, hey, whether it's Najee or Kyrie, let's just say Kyrie and Gafford go to the bench 5 minutes into the game. They play the first 5 minutes. They come out. Klay Thompson and Derek Lively come in for your first wave off of the bench. Your two guys that he's playing with, Luka. He's playing with a diver, you know, a pick and dive guy in Lively. You still have PJ Washington and Marshall on the court for defensive purposes, plus you're hoping they can knock down corner threes. And now Klay is more of an offensive weapon because he's your second guy. And then 3 minutes into that rotation, Luka comes off the court. Kyrie comes back in to finish off the first quarter. Klay's still out there with Kyrie, a creator, and you bring in whoever you're bringing in at that point, whether it's Dinwiddie, Grimes, whatever. But I hear what you're saying. I think the best solution is Klay off of the bench, but I think Klay, what happened that soured Klay, one of the things.
It was that exact thing.
He wasn't his love.
Coming off the bench as a sixth man. But I do think Klay would be best used as the sixth man for your 15-plus points off of the bench.
And to Corey's point leading into that, the reason why I would love to just take a look at it now, obviously you need to win games. You needed to win last night. You need to continue to win. We talked a lot about the importance of the regular season for this team.
West.
Yeah, absolutely. I would just love a little more, you know, maybe the next 10 to 12 games, a little tinkering and just seeing what that looks like.
I think that's what kids doing. I mean, I honestly do, just because look at the minutes of the guys on the bench and where, and when Jaden Hardy's sitting, when Omax is coming in, you know, all these different guys getting their opportunities. I think he's doing that. And I think they did it last year too. And then they were like,
that's fair.
We don't have the players, guys. Sorry.
I look at this team, it's only 8 games. Remember I said, let's give it 10 games before we start making definitions on who Klay Thompson is, and that's probably not enough either. And this is not enough yet, and Nico's not bringing, you know, calling teams up. But I do look at Maxi Kleber once again not being able to play NBA basketball because it's just too tough on his body. He is an NBA basketball player. I'm not knocking him for when he's on the court for his 10 to 20 minutes. He just is never available on a consistent basis for his 10 to 20 minutes. That hurts the Dallas Mavericks.
Fact.
I look at Omax Prosper last night and I say, there's potential there. I don't see how he cracks the rotation here unless there's injuries to Derek Lively and Maxi Kleber and PJ Washington. So you have three rotational guys out, and now Omax can get into a rotation. It looks like Jaden Hardy is going to have a tough time finding consistent minutes on this veteran team trying to win a championship. I just look at it and go, if that's the case, I can't count on Maxi Kleber. Omax Prosper is going to have a tough time getting on the court, even though it looks like he has some potential to be a rotational player in the NBA. And Jaden Hardy is a scorer off the bench that I have trouble maxing out because of I have a little guy in Kyrie Irving who's going to play a lot. This team desperately, to me, not today, needs to make a trade for a 6'9". He's not available. Pascal Siakam type of player. That would, to me, complete your team. I'm not saying you're getting Pascal Siakam, but find a guy who's 6'9", 6'10", who can stretch the court, who you can play at a center in a small ball situation, but more of a four that you feel comfortable with playing with Lively and Gafford, but can also be a center at times. And I think you have the pieces to make that trade. But to me, I'm watching this team going, that's what's missing here. I wish Omax was 2 or 3 inches taller.
Yeah.
That's like if Omax was like 2 or 3 inches.
And then he would fit the bill of what you were exactly looking for.
He would fit what I would be like. He's the Maxi Kleba replacement for the 40 games Maxi Kleba physically can't play.
Now, I'm just going to throw this out there. This is a question. Derek Lively out against the Bulls. Jason Kidd said he's trending in the right direction, which is encouraging. But there also isn't a set timetable for his return.
All right.
Which whenever you hear that, like there's no set timetable for a player to return, that makes me nervous. And it's the same thing. Like, I don't want PJ Washington gone. I don't want Derek Lively gone. I do still have this kind of underlying concern about the health of Derek Lively, not in general, but also like immediately, like right now, how much longer is he going to be out? Because on the one hand, that gives you the ability to do some experimentation. But on the other hand, it forces you to, and you might not want to, and you might be like, we can win this game if we don't D around. And you're like, well, I'm missing two of my best defenders. What do you want me to do?
I don't want you to have anxiety over this, Kevin.
I appreciate
it. Just accept that he's probably going to miss a number of, he's probably going to be one of those kind of guys that misses a number of games during the regular season.
I could see that.
Might miss two games in a playoff run just, you know, for that. Last year he did, right?
Yeah.
So he might have that happen a little bit, but he's going to be there whenever he can be there. And I think as you're saying, the amount of time to kind of find some other guys and find some other fits might be useful and helpful. You know what you have in Derek Lively when he doesn't change when he gets on the court. Everything,
I agree.
Everything about him once he steps on the court is exactly what you're going to get. You're never going to get less effort. You're going to get max effort as much as you can from him. So I wouldn't be too concerned about it, but I understand you want to win 78 games this year, and it's not going to happen. You told us. Hold on. You told us last time with the Stars that it could never happen.
No, it will not happen. And in fact, your next three games are going to be really interesting because you have Phoenix, Denver, Golden State, and watch out. Golden State has been awesome to start the season.
And they won a big game last night, too.
Yes, they did.
So
yes, they did. They beat the Celtics.
They're good at basketball.
And I know
it's amazing to me because I felt like they were a team that was going to be playing in that 7-10. And there's plenty of time for things to change. But
early on, they look sharp, sharp, sharp. Now, they beat the Celtics. The Celtics were without Jaylen Brown for a third straight game. And I want to take you to your favorite, Corey, Joe Mazzulla. This is Joe Mazzulla.
Oh, no, he scares me.
Well, these are the times.
He scares me like Dan Campbell scares me, though.
These are the times when I think it could be fun to be a beat reporter there, but also absolutely maddening. Let's go to cut 13.
John Madden.
This is Joe Mazzulla talking about Jaylen Brown, I guess.
Joe, just confirming no Jaylen Brown tonight, and if you have an update there, if you've talked to him about it.
Is he out? He's out.
Have you been able to talk to Jaylen about the injury?
Mm-hmm. I talk to him every day.
What were those conversations like?
I mean, we both kind of mumble when we talk, and then we just shake hands and move on.
Did he happen to mumble about his hip at all?
I couldn't understand him.
All right.
That's awesome.
Quality follow-up questions from that reporter.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
I know you're making me squeeze things out of you here, so I'm going to keep asking questions.
I just really appreciate it. Go back to that. Take me like halfway back in that. He was prepared, and he was like, did he happen to mumble about his hip? Like, that reporter was ready to go.
I talk to him every day.
What were those conversations like?
I mean, we both kind of mumble when we talk, and then we just shake hands and move on.
Did he happen to mumble about his hip at all?
I couldn't understand him.
All right. So clearly it did nothing for him. Like, he was not victorious in this situation. Good follow-up question doesn't always lead you to get what you want, because Joe Mazzulla had decided, nope. And he goes, I couldn't understand him.
I don't know
what
you're saying.
That was the end.
Kevin, that's my quote. I'm using that. I'm writing the whole story around that. If I'm that reporter, I'm going, this is a funny story that I'm writing today. The personality of Joe Mazzulla. You know, I'm definitely going to have a good story off that.
And then in the meantime, you lost to the Golden State Warriors. Jaylen Brown's been out a handful of games, and nobody is able to really crack the coach and find out what the deal is. Yeah. But I just thought that was another in an endless line of amazing Joe Mazzulla interactions.
Clay knows what Steve Kerr would be saying in the 7-1 streak, right?
I'm sure.
Like, he knows what Steph, how he would be going about his business, too. You think there's any conversation, like, he's looking at it and going, oh man, I know they're talking about this. I need to bring these things up in this locker room. I'm curious what kind of things he brings to this locker room.
Yeah.
That he learned from a team that's won championships.
I think that's a great question. And I do wonder if he's employed that now, or if he's like, you know what, I'm going to wait, till wait later. A
Maybe
minute.
So.
But that's
they don't need it right now.
Yeah,
they just need me
really
to make some shots
question.
And be smart with the basketball.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, it's time for Baseball Nuggets with Mike Pastrnak.
We talk about the number one free agent the Rangers want, Roky Sasaki, next.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan right now. It's time for Baseball Nuggets with Mike Pastrnak.
Okay, Baseball Nuggets brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, and scenic views. Now, I'll go quickly back to yesterday's Baseball Nuggets. Just kind of looking up more Skip Schumacher. By the way, I also asked somebody way in the know, because I was like, man, sometimes I've said Shoemaker, sometimes I've said Schumacher.
I thought it was Mocker.
And it is Mocker. It's to me been official that it is Mocker. So if I say Skip Schumacher, or if you say it, we are saying it wrong. I don't think Schumacher cares, because I was watching the podcast to finish it off after yesterday's show was over for us, and they called him Schumacher at one point. Like Eric Hosmer or whatever. Yeah. And it wasn't like a Schumacher. But then I wanted to ask, like, crap, is it Maker or Mocker? And it is Mocker. So
we're going to be calling him Skip anyway. So,
well, he's just going to be part of the front office. But I think this is interesting. They started talking about his son, Brody. And I'm like, oh, okay. Like, I'm just listening. And it was about, all right, let's talk about your son, Brody. Who's Brody? I don't know. Like, so his son, Brody, is one of the best high school players in America. Brody Schumacher. He's in California, like, playing his high school ball and everything like that. He's committed to TCU.
What? TCU? I love TCU.
Okay. So, does this make a little bit more sense?
Do you think he's going to come here and the timeline isn't as much of a rush, if I'm reading this correctly, because then hopefully his kiddo will be at TCU and he can watch whatever the hell he wants.
So this year, Skip Schumacher can live at home for the most part. He can travel and go look at Frisco Rough Riders or go look at the AAA team in, I say, Austin, but why am I drawing
Round Rock?
Yeah, the Round Rock Express. So he can do all of these things. He can help out the organization in multiple ways. And I do think he is going to be a sought-after manager after this season. And in the middle of the season, I'm sure teams are like, call up Skip Schumacher's agent. I think it might be Scott Boras, the way he was talking so fondly about Scott Boras, but I don't know that. But I don't know if he's in that big of a rush, because as a father, he did make decent money playing baseball. He has made decent money in the game of baseball after it's over. I'm sure the Rangers are giving him a pretty good salary. I have no clue what it is, and I'm not going to ask. So I was like, fine, I don't care. He's probably making a pretty good salary at the job that the Rangers just gave him. But he can watch his son, his senior year, as one of the best players in the state of California, as one of the best players in the country. And then if Bruce Bochy wants to manage two more years after this, he can be like, hey, I'm part of the Rangers organization. I'm learning more about the farm system. I'm learning more about the scouting department. I'm learning more about the general managers and people underneath the general managers. I'm learning more about the coaching staff and the players at the big league level. So if I do take over the Texas Rangers after Bochy is done, if that's my path, I don't mind if it's 2, 3, 4 years down the road, because I can be here and watch my son play college baseball in Fort Worth while also being in the same city pretty much that the Texas Rangers are playing in, while having meetings with Chris Young and why am I drawing a blank on Ross's last name?
Minister Maker.
Yeah, who's now the general manager, you know. And so I just look at it and go, wow, I think that this isn't about, oh, well, is Bruce Bochy only going to do it one more year? And then, because I was listening to G-Bag Nation, and they were having theories on, like, well, then Bruce Bochy, if he doesn't win in the playoffs or win to make the playoffs, then what if they tell him, hey, we got Skip and he's ready to go? Skip might be like, I'm not. I want to be a dad and still part of Major League Baseball. Yeah. And so he might have got a perfect scenario, and the Rangers might have got a perfect scenario where Skip can enjoy being a father, watching his son play his senior year of baseball, then watching his son maybe play TCU baseball in college. He might get drafted in the first round, too. He is a very high prospect. Or a top round where he might just go pro, and that eliminates him coming to Fort Worth and going to college. Now, that being said, I want to move past that. It's still great news for the Texas Rangers, but there's a little bit of added extra stuff there that kind of looking at Skip Schumacher's life and where his son is at in his life. Okay, let's talk about Roky Sasaki. He's 23 years old, just turned 23. He is the super phenom from Japan that looks like he's coming over to the United States. He has declined all offers from his Japanese team. He is saying, I do not want to play Japanese baseball anymore. I want to go over to the major leagues. And Kylie McDaniel of ESPN is reporting he is coming over to the United States. It looks pretty clear that he will be pitching Major League Baseball next year instead of playing in Japan. I did some research on him over the weekend because I want to know more about him. So here's what you need to know. One, his movement on his four-seam fastball is the way to say it. Nobody has ever had more movement on his four-seam fastball in the history of baseball since they've been able to to do this. Nobody.
Okay.
Literally, I cannot. They said the closest guy you can come to that his fastball is like in the major leagues is Hunter Green, who is a 24, 25-year-old all-star for the Cincinnati Reds. He did make the all-star team this year. He's a very good pitcher. He was a guy that people thought might be the Shohei of the United States. That's how good he was in high school at hitting and pitching. Hunter Green. He transitioned to just being a pitcher at the professional level. But they say his fastball, if I'm trying to compare it to somebody in Major League Baseball, it's like Hunter Green. It does touch 100 miles an hour. This year, it didn't. It was more around 97 on average because he had a little bit of arm issues this year. So that's who he is, fastball, four-seam fastball-wise. They say similar to Hunter Green, if I'm trying to compare him to a Major League four-seam fastball. His split finger, they say, is unbelievably great. This is a pitch that has, in a way, a hair of a cut to it. So the ball will move a little bit right to left while breaking downward. Okay? They say the closest they can compare it to, even though it doesn't have as much left-handed break as Sasaki's split finger, is Logan Gilbert, the starting pitcher for the Seattle Mariners. So they're saying his fastball is like Hunter Green. His split finger is like Logan Gilbert. Now, here comes a little bit of the issues. Those are two of the super positives.
Yeah.
He has a bad breaking ball. They were saying his breaking ball, his slider, is average at best.
Huh.
He's actually probably in his rookie year in the major leagues going to have reverse splits. What does that mean? That means he's going to be better against left-handed hitters than he is right-handed hitters. They're afraid. They're like negative is that he might struggle against right-handed hitters, where you might have to have in the fifth or sixth inning a right-handed pitcher ready to face the right-handed hitter. Let's just go with the Dodgers, Mookie Betts. Because you feel more comfortable with him facing Ohtani than you do your left-handed reliever. You feel more comfortable with your right-handed reliever facing Mookie Betts than your right-handed starting pitcher in Roky Sasaki. So they're like, there's time to work on it. He's only 23 years old. They're like, maybe you get him to develop more of a hard slider, kind of you would maybe put it in the cutter range.
Okay.
Rather than the breaking ball he has now, which seems to not, it's like a get me over breaking ball rather than a swing and miss or a soft contact breaking ball. Like, hey, throw it first pitch. They said maybe he develops a curveball. Maybe you tell him, hey, let's nix that pitch. That's not a good pitch. The other thing, too, is still the Japanese baseball is a hair different than the Major League Baseball. They said the movement he has on his four-seam fastball, which is unmatched by anybody in the history of baseball since we've been able to record movement.
High seams.
Yeah, and it's a smaller ball and a tackier ball.
Yeah.
Not much small. It's really weird. That can you believe that in Japan they still use a little bit of a different size ball and it's tackier?
Yes, that is odd.
So he said, let's go to 2023 when he pitched twice in the World Baseball Classic in the United States. So he's pitching in a major league city, in a major league stadium with a major league baseball. In the World Baseball Classic. His movement went down a little bit, but it was still tremendous. Does that make sense?
Yes.
He does not really throw a two-seam fastball. So they're like, what could you do to improve him from what you saw? One is they said you need to get him somewhat healthy because he had a little bit of a shoulder issue, didn't pitch as much, and wasn't as successful this year. Two, probably maybe work in also a two-seam fastball along with his great four-seam fastball, develop that, and then you have to develop a better breaking ball because right now he just has a get-me-over slider. He does not have a breaking ball against right-handed hitters that you can rely on. He's more of a two-pitch pitcher and will probably dominate left-handers immediately. We'll have to work on his stuff, especially breaking ball stuff, to dominate right-handed hitters. But you're not going to find a guy with a better fastball at the speed he throws with the movement he has. And then the split finger is devastating and one of the best. So you're getting a four-seamer splitty to start your career off at 23 years old that you can work with stuff to hopefully improve him. I'm running out of time here.
You want to pick this back up? And Mike likes it because there's a lot of info about the posting and the finances.
Yes, there is a lot on that. I'll get into that in Mike Likes It. But I just wanted to kind of put this out there. I did watch him. I did see him. I did watch scouting reports on him. This is the guy the Rangers want. The Dodgers are the heavy favorite. It doesn't mean the Rangers can't get him. That'll be the tease for
'cause a lot of it depends on timing, right?
Yes, timing matters, but his stuff is pretty awesome, and the Rangers really want him, and you'd be getting a guy who touches 100 with his four-seam fastball with one of, they think, the best split fingers immediately when he hits the major leagues.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, it's time for some gridiron gravy, the Goff to St. Brown connection, plus why can't Chicago score? Next on The Fan.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.